Okay. I think, no, not really. I think those ideas, all those things accumulated in after the 1966, my communication with other people across the country, other women besides women here in Los Angeles, other women groups, you know, after I got to know the Gloria Steinems and the Dorothy Heights and some other people from back, you know, back to wherever else I went. And they began to talk about the women issues, and if you look at them, you could put them all together. After the ladies that came out of Appalachia in Kentucky and said to me, these were white women, and said, don't leave us out of the operation because we catch hell just like you do because we're white. We're poor, and we need help. We have to go on welfare. We're not treated any better than you are. Then, you know, so cause they thought that welfare rights at one time was all black organization. Mm-hmm. That was not true. I just happened to be black myself, and there was nothing I could do about that. But those women, you know, then we had the Puerto Rican women from New York and New Jersey involved. So it was a multi-mixture of women. And we had some men, but we had very few men who were heads of household as far as welfare is concerned.
So most of that development comes later then.
Right.
In that period from 63 to 66, before all the groups meet in 66, what would you say were the activities of the group here in L.A.?
Well, our activities of the group were strictly community and politically wise. And as I said, we were interested in our kids. More, I guess you could say, ourselves, you know, our schools, you know, we wanted our kids to have better work than we had. We, you know, I'm not so good, sure that's a good idea either, but but that's what we wanted. Our parents had passed that on to us because they wanted us to be in better shape than they were, and they worked hard to do that, and we thought there was no more than right for us to do that for our kids, and we just found ourselves in a different situation than our foreparents did. And I think we wasn't just really out on a woman's kind of situation. It just was something that we felt like we had to do for survival. And as I said later on, when women organizing themselves, and you see, I got a problem with some of that. I can't quite put my finger on it. I've been kicking it around. I don't understand how men, or who gave it to them, or did we give it to them, have so much power over women. Because I don't know of a man who ever came on this earth that didn't come through a woman except Adam. So I understand he was created by God. Everybody else made this passage through a woman. So something must happen to give the man all this power, because he couldn't make it without somebody, some woman brought him here. I don't understand how we let that power get away from us.
Did you think that back then, do you think, ideas like that?
I really don't think so, but it seemed like after it comes to focus and I hear so much women talk and women want to be liberated and kind of liberated from what women created. Women created this man. We brought this man here. And for some kind of way, we ought to be able not to be so powerless over some put some power up, did we follow you? Mm-hmm. I didn't quite see what I went out of yet.
Did you talk about this sort of thing with the other women in that first group?
No, I didn't.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't talk about our powerless
mm-hmm.
unto men within ANC Mothers. That I tell you, that really wasn't. Well, that wasn't what we was all about, because all of the women, even they didn't have no husbands, they had boyfriends, so we wasn't all about man versus woman. More or less, it was woman versus woman, because the people we had to deal with at the welfare office was women.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They might have been, I think the department head has always been a man, but the fact is, we didn't know that. The only person that could give us hell was other women.
Mainly white?
Most of it. Oh, no, my God, no. Child, if you want to really get some Shona stuff dropped on you, ain't got nothing to do with color, baby, no. Matter of fact, I had two male social workers. Well, I never really had, to tell the truth, I never had a lot of trouble out of any of them. Not me personally, but I had two male social workers. Was pretty good. Was pretty good guys. But they both were white. But when it comes down to social workers, they had to do with race, creed, color. All of them women talk and act alike. They make you feel that the money is coming directly out of their pocket. That's what they do for you. So now, there is no color line when you get to social workers. That is true.
Do you think that the women that you were working with in the project themselves felt powerless, or do you think that they didn't feel that?
They didn't discuss it. You know, I think maybe powerless where maybe the father was not supporting the child or their separation from their male spouse was for whatever reason. Mm-hmm. Usually it's another woman when it boils down to it, you know, maybe that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But those kind of things weren't discussed a lot.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It really wasn't.
So there were a couple of focuses then. Trying to get child care, training for the women, getting decent respect and all the rights that they were entitled to under welfare, and these kind of community projects that were tied more to kids in the schools. And you said there was the drill team.
Yeah, we had
the drill team.
That was
was there anything else?
We used to take them on trips. I remember once when Gilbert Lindsay was elected to the city council, he gave a big Christmas party every Aiken Field. And he must have had Mattel, I don't know where they had any toys to sell or not, because Gilbert had them all up at every Aiken Field. And I remember taking 26 children down there on the bus myself from the project, you know. And it must have been 3,000 or 4,000 kids there singing Jingle Bells. And so, you know, things like that. We and there were other mothers who took some group of children other places. Two ball games, two other activities. Mm-hmm. In the summer, there was a man named Louis Lomax. He used to be on television.
Oh, yeah. Right, right.
He used to have summer activities and we always had invitations through our manager out there. And buses, two of his buses come, take a kid. One time he took him on a cruise at Catalina. So we had to go around and make sure that the child got there on time and talk to the parents and get them to sign slips and, you know, see if the kid had the proper kind of things to be in, that kind of stuff. I guess self-supporting, I don't know what you call that, organization.
Mm-hmm.
So we're just interested in quite a bit of things. But if you're saying, are we interested in directly the issues of women, period, no. Because some of those kids that went on trips and in the drill team and stuff like that, they had fathers at home, but they lived in the community,
right.
So they need to participate.
Now, were you tied to other community groups? Was it like you were just one more of the various community groups?
Just one more of the various community groups.
And it just so happened that what tied people together was that, in the beginning anyhow, was that you were on welfare.
Mm-hmm.
And so that you dealt with that issue, but
right.
there was all this other stuff?
Right.
Okay. During this time, that made me think about something else in terms of community groups. During this 3 years, this like 63 to 66 period, did you have demonstrations at all?
No. I think our first big demonstration was when we organized the county. Actual other groups, part of the program came on the scene, and other groups began to organize. Like we had Pasadena and Dennis.
So it was after the 66th meeting, probably, then.
Yeah. Then we started. Okay. We put these people together,
uh-huh.
and we come up with a countywide organization. To that particular organization was to deal directly with county politics and policies. That's when we started meeting with the county welfare director or the board of supervisors, you know, those kind of things.
So it sounds like up to then, the group was more of a kind of social support network for...
So, if you want to call it social, educational, political, etc.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Okay. And it was when you came together with all the other groups that it got more focused.
Yeah. Came on to into county, and then we got into the state.
Okay. Well, let me ask a couple more things about that, and then I think we could start with that 66th meeting next time.
Uh-huh.
Before the 66th meeting, were you aware of other groups like yours focused on or pulling together welfare mothers?
Until as of April 1966, I had an opportunity to go to Washington.
Right, that first.
That's where I met Etta Horn from Welfare Recipients Alliance in Washington, D.C.
So that was really the first?
That was the first one.
Okay.
And that must have been April.
Is that where Shriver spoke and you disrupted?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was April.
April
yeah.
1966.
Right. So up until then, the group...
I heard of nothing. That's why they give ANC Mothers the credit for being the first one to organize. Never heard of anything.
Okay.
Yes, ma'am.
And was there any connection between ANC Mothers and some of the civil rights organizations in LA at the time?
No. Mm-hmm. Not together.
Yeah.
We knew about the NAACP, CORE,
right.
you know, people like that. But we, as a group, we were not involved.
And did they know about you? Did they?
I don't think so. No, because we were undercover 18 months before we had anybody know what we were doing too much. You know, because people were frightened. And then when you're talking about, we thought clients was frightened. The welfare system was frightened also because they didn't know what in the world are these folks talking about. And they were running around trying to find what was going on. And that was a hard one for a lot of people.
Mm.
You know, because even some of them clients we wrote them letters to, they got upset. You know. And they called the social worker, and the social worker didn't know nothing what they were talking about. And it was kind of messy there for a while. So it was about, I guess, 12, 18 months. We didn't come out really in the opening until I went on Louis Lomax show, telephone show.
Oh, when was that?
About 18 months later.
So like into 65 already?
Somehow.
I see. Then up until then...
We weren't in trouble. We just did what we done in at home, man.
I see. But you would still, you'd advise people informally. You wouldn't go with them to the welfare office.
Oh, no.
Okay, see. It was more informal kind of advising,
right.
Like support service and this community.
Right. Because it was new, it was also, yeah, I understand, it was also new to us, too. And we didn't have no, what would you call it, no leadership. I was a leader, so you know, didn't know what exactly what I wanted to do. So now you know just what shape we was in.
Well, there were the sisters of you who were sort of like the key people. But would you hold meetings?
Yeah, in my house or in somebody's house. Yeah.
Would larger numbers come to them? Or?
6, 8, 10, 12, mm-hmm. whatever one.
So it was a core group. Of, but and you wouldn't hold general meetings. How about after you came out?
Oh, after we come out, we used to do it right there. We didn't care. We come.
Now, how did you get onto the Lomax show?
Hey, you know, that's a good question. I was on the Lomax show with somebody. That was my first appearance.
How did they hear about you? Do you know?
Because
it was...
Something happened. I don't remember. I forgot never. But I got a call. Oh, as I do, there was a lady, another lady working over here. It was around, it was centered around the poverty program.
Mm.
And they had started the poverty program, and I had heard about, they were setting up some of my office in Nickerson Garden. But I couldn't get no satisfaction out of it. So I called the congressman's office. And I didn't get no satisfaction out of what Bill told me. Bill Williams. That whatever Bill said, I don't remember that. Didn't satisfy my curiosity at all. So they had set up their office at Regal Field. It wasn't a ball diamond anymore. So I went there and talked to some people. And it still didn't satisfy my curiosity. And I just got to calling folks all over the place. You know, that was just one day I just feel like messing up with folks. So that's what I thought. So, and then I started going to the poverty meetings and getting up and asking questions. Part of the time I didn't know what I was asking by myself. And when they answered it, I didn't know if they was telling me things or not, you know. So I just got all into it. And I guess my mouth got me on the little somebody show, you know. I don't know, but then that's really when it came. And I talked about what we had done and how we had done it on the show. And I think a lot of people were relieved to find out really what it was we were really doing. And for years after that, I remember coming in at Huntington Park maybe 2 years after, and this young lady said, "I saw you on television." And the way she said it, that she saw it yesterday. But it had been 2 years prior to that. They still remember me from that. But
and do you remember what you talked about?
Most about the organization. Mm-hmm. That's what Lewis was interested in. He had never heard of no such thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I had about 15 minutes on there, I guess, with his questions. And he had told me what his questions would be when he talked to me on the phone. And I just answered his questions.
Did he make a tape of it for you, ever?
I don't know if they were making tapes in those days.
Yeah. What was the focus mainly then on the issue of respectful treatment?
The issue then was the organization itself.
Yeah.
That's why, I remember him wanting to know where did we meet at it, and I told him at the clothesline, wherever we choose to, where we saw each other, that's where we met.
Mm-hmm. Now, were you, at that point, when you became public, were you still focused on the child care issue then, too?
We never gave up on the child care issue. Never did. And it didn't come into focus until they decided to build a Martin Luther King House.
Mm.
And I went to a meeting one day, and started Fremont High School, and they had a lot of different people from the high school and the planning and the community and blah, blah, blah. That's a lot of people making plans, and they say that I told them even up and talked about childcare and what we needed and told them I don't see none of that on your board, and I just went through it all. And about a month or so after that, I looked up and was got a telephone call, and somebody was on the phone named Robert Greenberg who wanted to come and talk to him. And he came out to the house and he sat down and talked. And then I went to Marion's house, the lady that took me to the welfare department. She had the proposal. We didn't even know, we didn't even call it a proposal. We called it wants and needs.
Yeah.
And she had it in her garage in storage. And I went and asked her for it, and she got, dug it out and gave it to me, and I gave it to him.
Well, how did he find you?
Was this from the meeting that I had tore up down at the...
Oh, at Martin Luther King Hospital.
About Martin Luther King.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Well, I think, unless you have anything else you want, until this period before that April meeting, this is that's a good place to start then, to really then focus on the development of the national organization.
Okay.
Unless, is there anything else in this period up to 60? Oh, you said, that you had gone back to school. Before 66, had you then gone back to school?
My last day of school was the day that they started the watch riot, 1965. I was coming, that was our last night in Jordan. Except for the year I spent it in Boston.
Right. So you going back to night school then?
Yeah, evening school.
To at Jordan High?
Mm-hmm.
And was this for the...
academic.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And how many years did you do that? How long did you do that?
I got about 11th grade education.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
But see, in the South, my 11th grade education in the South is equivalent to college in California.
Mm-hmm. And you were already done when the Watts Riot started, or that stopped it?
That was the last night. I was finished with the class. Uh-huh. I just didn't go back. I just got busy into some other stuff, and I didn't go back.
How did the riots affect the community? Because you were fairly not that close, really, out of the project, were you?
The first car was burned up two blocks from my house. Oh.
Well, how did the riots affect you and the community?
Well, it was a scary situation. Not that at one point, trying to figure out what was going on. Since then, I learned a lot what was going on. And to what effect it had on this community, I'm not sure. I'm not sure whether the effect was good or was it bad. Because, to tell you the truth, I don't see much different in this community in 1991 than it was in 1961, myself. I don't see it that. That might be short-sighted on my part, but I don't see it.
Did they take you by surprise, or did you feel that things were reaching a boiling point?
No, I think the whole thing was a surprise. I don't think nothing, I had thought about nothing coming to no ear like that, you know. Sometimes when you think about it, you wonder what a lot of people took credit for starting it. I'm not so sure that's good, man.
Mm.
You know. And to whose benefit.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, somebody benefited from it because Phil Gilbert put a lot of money into this area that it all went round just as fast as it went and came in. You know, it came in every Friday evening and it went right back out down the freeways. And so we thought basically left with nothing like this. So we always have.
Did you have any direct encounters when the guard came in? Do you remember any experiences?
I was on 100th Street when the guards came. When the guards decamped at Will Rogers Park, right about And I was already at 100th Street. I had been called down by the Dr. Christopher Taylor, who owned a lot of property there and was a dentist there. And he'd been working with us.
So is he the one that had the building that you got?
No, no, that was Dr. Hall. That's So we'd been, I had been down in his office all day watching the people go in and out of the stores, watching people picking up things that they call it looting. But it was there, so people got it. It was going to be burned anyway. That's what I remember about it.
Mm-hmm. How about your kids?
My youngest son was not here. He was on a camping trip, thank God. The other one is a very conservative, so he wasn't really involved at all. He never got off the porch. He and his little friend for years. My sons were not. Well, my youngest son was kind, and he moved around quite a bit. But then there wasn't any trouble or nothing. But my youngest son had one friend. My oldest son had one friend, and they used to sit on his porch and sit and talk like old men. My youngest one, though, he was always moving around, but he never got into any trouble. Same as he does now.
Were you still living in the in Nickerson?
Yes.
Up until
I moved out of Nickerson in 1967.
Okay. Well, I think it's a good place to stop because then we can start with that April 66 meeting.
Oh, okay.
And then